Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This thing, we had a massive response, Mr. Jules Gill. I probably should say, and probably should introduce the show. It's the Entitled Banter Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, you're Jules Gill.
I am Jules Gill. As many times as I try and deny it, I am unfortunately me.
I thought we would, because every single week we ask people what's on their minds, what sort of questions do they want us to dive into, what sort of thoughts do they have in regards to the gaming industry. But also, we had a bit of an emo theme this week. I forget what started it. You posted a funeral for a friend thing.
Right. Okay. So what happened was is that I was filming a Choose Your Own Adventure, and I was talking about how 2003 was a great year to be alive. And then all of a sudden, the only thing that popped into my head that happened around that time, I was like, Funeral for a Friend, what album did they drop there? And after some research, it was Casually Dressed and In Deep Conversations. What an absolute banger of an album. And they're from down the road from where I'm living now in Ponty.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting.
Even get them on the show.
And then we started talking about, because we were talking about Welsh hardcore / emo acts that came up through, then we started talking about Bullet for My Valentine, because they just released a new song. And then we were like,
"Bring out the
they're also day. Welsh and from just down the road as well. And then we're just like, it's just a cavalcade of emotions coming back from 2003 to 2006.
It's a big old jamboree. So I thought, like, alongside asking for people's gaming questions and stuff, I just thought I'd ask, what's the best Bullet song? Because they don't really have a go-to, I mean, maybe this is controversial, they don't have a go-to big radio single. They don't have an Enter Sandman. They don't have a Sweet Child of Mine. They don't have one of those go-to songs. Even though when people start suggesting them, obviously these are all absolute bangers. So
yeah.
a lot of people voted for or said Hand of Blood. A lot of people said Waking the Demon. And a lot of people said Screaming Fire. But also alongside that was Your Betrayal, Don't Need You, Tears Don't Fall, Four Words to Choke Upon, Suffocating Under Words of Sorrow, Hearts Burst Into Fire, Forever and Always, which was a hell of a show. All These Things I Hate revolve around you.
There's a lot of very decent songs that they have made. But if it was up to me, it's Four Words to Choke Upon is the absolute all-time banger, because I had that initial EP that they released back in 2004 or 5, wherever it was. Uh-huh. And it had just the two songs on it, which was Four Words to Choke Upon and what was the other bloody song that was on there? Hand of Blood. Hand of Blood was on that one as well.
Hand of Blood!
Yeah, so I had both of those and I was just like, rinse them down, because I remember at that time just getting so into emo, because my friends Stu and Ollie were basically like, they introduced me to all of those things, like Alkaline Trio, they introduced me to like Black Flag, like loads of sort of punky alternate metal stuff, and I was just like, oh, this is brilliant. And then I found that and showed it to them, and they were like, oh mate, this is stonkingly good, this is wicked, mate, this is wicked. It's around the time that Chop Suey came out as well. What a time to be alive.
Just for two old men reminiscing on things that were now 18 years ago.
I know.
Still, I mean, that's the thing, some people in the comments said, because we had a massive response to this, which is lovely. I think I might do more random music questions going forward. But yeah, we had
So now that What Culture Music's dead, we might as well, you know what I'm
saying? We've got to do something for it. Got to get these takes out there. But yeah, a couple of people said, are Bullet actually emo? Because in my head, when I was in high school, they were just rolled in with all the other sort of like gothy emo stuff.
Were they emo?
I would say so.
Of course they bloody were. Of course they were screamo to the core. Because, I mean, if you look at any of their early music videos, they had all of the hallmark trappings of emo music videos.
Playing in a forest.
Pretty woman wearing fishnet stockings, crying, long-haired fringe. ranges, lots of that rotating headbanging pose thing, almost the crab core style stance when they were doing the heavy riff drop bit. And then when it came to the nice, beautiful choruses, it was always like, oh, look at me. I'm so tender. I'm a bad boy, but inside I'm just a wee little boy looking for a cuddle.
Oh, God. The thing is with Bullet over the years as well, because I have such a soft spot for Bullet, because I obviously grew up on the Poison, Screaming Fire, trying to stick with Fever as best as possible. I think most of Fever is solid. Bar the title track.
No.
The title track is bad.
Fever is dog cock. It is
not
awful,
all of it.
I don't like it at all. That's the moment when they were just kind of like, you know what? Let's not try and let's just try and fill stadiums instead. Lads, do you want to just dial back the effort a bit? And they just went, yeah, sounds good to me.
I remember that being talked about on Metal Hammer's podcast as their like go-to black album. Like they were going to make this Metallica black album style release that would be the one that got
them. Never claim that. Never make that claim. If you're a musician, never say this is going to be like the Beatles white album. This is going to be the black.
That was what Avenged said for their Hail to the King album as well, which it kind of came true for them because they got to headline Download off the back of it. But
but do you measure success by how many records you sell or what the musical content you create in? Because Hail to the King is full of stadium bangers, as in like it's just made for Johnny Everybody. Yeah, it's just like parody albums, but like it doesn't have anything that's that separates that and says this is 100% Avenged Sevenfold. Give me Backcountry. Give me Seventh Trumpet, whatever it was called.
Sounding the Seventh Trumpet. They should have headlined a long time ago on the back of things like Backcountry or even the self-titled one. Give me Brompton Cocktail in the middle of a field.
But Sidewinder, that's where it's at, mate.
Sidewinder's good. Anything where Sinister Gates himself is allowed to go crazy is always something I'm a fan of. But yeah, emo was a hell of a time. We're classing Bullet for My Valentine as emo. All these songs that we mentioned are brilliant. You're saying Four Words is your top shout. I think I'll go Hand of Blood because I love the riff, but I also love Waking the Demon. But yeah, their new song, very, very quickly, what do you think of their new song, Knives? Because the thing is, that's what I was going to say before, was I have a soft spot for Bullet, but they have been through the ringer. They fell the hell off. Fever was the beginning of it. What's the one that has Riot? Temper was horrific.
That was just embarrassing for him.
Venom was like they tried to do like another Poison style album, but I don't think Matt took. Singing those old school lyrics, because he's always had really bad lyrics, but if you scream them, they're kind of fun.
Yeah.
But if he sings them, they're quite bad. And then Gravity was like that weird Imagine Dragons style thing. Yeah. And it's just like, dudes, what are you doing?
The problem is that when metal bands get older, unfortunately, it's just they become lighter, as in like they're just not able to summon that sort of darkness and energy that they had before. It's like it affects like even the biggest bands like Slipknot. They went through some absolute hardships with the death of their bassist. And you would think that that would conjure up a new sort of raw sense of energy, but it's age. Age is the thing that stops them from being able to harness that thing. Like they're not going to be bouncing off the walls when they've got to mind their bloody backs. Like, you know what I mean?
I do think that as you get older, you just aren't as angsty about stuff or aggy about stuff as you were when you were younger.
And you know what? It becomes a falsely. It's like if you are trying to summon that level of angst and anger, it comes from a place that isn't true. They're not suffering as much anymore most of the time. They've got very cushy jobs. They've got like very nice bank account balances. They've got families. They're for all intents and purposes pretty happy.
Well, I mean, that was the thing with Layne Staley said that, the old singer of Alice in Chains, before he passed away, when they did their Grind album, he was like, I'm having to literally force myself to be depressed to find subject matter because everything is fine now. And I think that can be a massive problem. Bullet for me, I have such a soft spot for them. I think they're a fascinating band. I always want to see what they're coming out with. And God help you if you've sat through all this conversation and you either have no idea who Bullet are or you don't care about them or you're not the age that we were. But just going off the response that we got, I'm going to assume that a lot of listeners are Bullet for My Valentine fans. Some good songs to check out if you've not heard them before. Anyway, in terms of video game stuff,
sure thing.
Next question from Travis Nichols, who says, Sam Fisher and Solid Snake, both in their prime, get into a bar fight. Who wins? Sam Fisher. And I love Solid Snake, but I think
you think that he'd outdo him in the close combat.
Because Solid Snake doesn't know CQC. Like, if it was against Naked Snake, then Naked Snake could beat.
Right, you're getting technical. Snake, I get you.
As far as I know, hasn't really trained in any specific. Yeah, he can do the double punch and the big spin kick, but like that's kind of it. I think Sam Fisher is way more trained in like specific takedowns. We've seen him do different grapples. We know that he's really effective with that curved knife that he has. I think he'd take him.
But then again, if you think about it, if Sam's rocked up to the bar with his little tri-point visor down, it's like, thing, then all Snake has to do is just throw one flashbang and he's blind.
Like, it's, you know, true. I mean? If he gets the chaff grenades out, then Sam
then he's absolutely screwed, because that's half of his tech gone.
I mean, we have to
remember as well that if Snake is able to sort of do a little backwards cartwheel over, flip over a table, he's got infinite ammo.
He's able to
rinse the entire bar. He can fire a Nikita missile and guide it into Sam's face.
To be fair, that's the thing, it's like Solid Snake in his prime. Is it Metal Gear Solid 1 Solid Snake? Is it Twin Snake Solid Snake, where he's back flipping off missiles in midair and everything? I'm going to go with Metal Gear Solid 2 Solid Snake, Kurt Russell's Solid Snake, which does give him infinite ammo. But he also, alongside the double punch kick thing, can only flip people over. And what can Sam Fisher do? He can roll. He can roll right over. He's going to stand back up. He's back there. He's hit the right trigger.
Do you know who actually wins? Gabe from Siphon runs in with his taser and gets them both.
Doing that weird side run that he does, where his hips run faster than he does.
What a legend, eh?
They'd kill each other. Who's your definitive shout for this, Fisher or Snake?
It's a tough one, isn't it, really? Because I feel like it all depends on who kind of throws the first punch, because you've got the element of surprise in your side, which would definitely help. I'd have to go gut, and on heart, I'd say Snake. I'll say Snake.
Very fair, very fair. I think they're both sat next to each other drinking, and all of a sudden one of them says something the other one doesn't agree with, and it goes from there.
He's like sipping.
Cold-blooded.
He's sipping, puts it down and goes, I reinvented the stealth genre. And then the other one just goes, no, I reinvented the stealth genre.
My story actually makes sense. Yeah. It just kicks the hell off. Next question from Journey Evergreens. What possibly the best name that's ever submitted a question. My only true great Bullet album is the first one. No reason to skip a single track. But my question is, what game, if any, from the PS1 do you feel is super overlooked by most games media these days?
The PlayStation 1 has a huge library of games they have so many amazing titles in there that I could just pull at random, and I reckon I could elicit the same sort of response from Scott. She's like, oh my god, I remember that one. Like, do you remember Loaded and Reloaded, the top-down shooter game where you played as prison convicts?
I remember picking those up, but I don't think I ever bought it. I know the artwork for it, but yeah.
Do you remember Tunnel B1, where you fly down? It's like a puzzle game, but you fly, it's like Descent.
Yeah. Oh my, yeah. These are things that I like picked up to try. Tunnel B1, I could not figure out as a kid. That was like that Heart of Darkness, where I did the beginning of it over and over again.
Heart of Darkness is a great one.
Roll Cage is brilliant. Me and you played Grip. That one time Grip is like the spiritual sequel to Roll Cage.
Good times.
Heart of Darkness should totally be held up, though. The animation in that is incredible.
Yeah, the animation is, but unfortunately the trial and error gameplay kind of let it down quite a lot.
It is a bit like Dragon's Lair.
I watched somebody do a playthrough of it the other day, actually, because I was doing some research for a list, and I was just like, oh, it does look fantastic, but there's a few sections in it that are like, unless you knew exactly where to go beforehand, you're just going to die.
I really redid the intro for that over and over again. Like, me and my friends spent weekends trying to get through that game and never managed to.
If we're talking about games that were just absolutely phenomenal that do not get enough love, for me, it's got to be like something like Future Cop LAPD, because I thought that was phenomenal fun. Me and my cousin Neil played through that in the two-player mode, and it was just so good.
Future Cop is the best Transformers game that isn't a Transformers game. Yeah. Like, just going between vehicle to mech to that little... I guess, was there three modes of transport? Yeah, you were definitely a car floaty thing, and definitely a mech. Was it just the two?
Yeah. I think you could turn into a helicopter, couldn't you?
Maybe.
Or was the floaty thing the helicopter?
Possible. That was 1998 or something. But that was also made by Visceral, who eventually did Dead Space and everything.
I tell you what, mate. Can you help me out? There's a video game that came out for the PlayStation 1. And anyone listening at home, if they can identify this, it'd be great, because I'd love to add this to my collection. You play as a police officer who drives a really high-tech car around, and you basically have to shoot down criminals that are like driving around, and you absorb their parts into your car to make your car stronger. Yeah. It's a really bizarre game, and I've only got a demo of it somewhere, and I can't remember what it is, and it really annoys me to this day that I can't figure out what it is.
That makes me think of something like it's not going to be Spy Hunter, because that was on
PS2. It's not Spy Hunter. I don't know what it is.
Whatever this is, this fits the bill as being something that's completely overlooked by games media, because none of us know what it is. But I'm going to say Heart of Darkness, because I think that game should get more props for its animation, even though it sucks to play through.
I'll also give a big shout out to Pandemonium 1 and 2.
Nice.
Great sort of 2D or 2.5D, I guess you'd call them, platformer games. Really, really fun to play through. Mm-hmm. If not checked it out, check it out.
Massive shout. Next question from Derek McMullen, who says, I was into emo before it became a lifestyle, and then it was ruined for me. Is there any game you loved until the fandom scared you off? There's not for me. I don't really... This sounds really brazen, but I really don't care what other people think on that level. Like, it's not, I love Rick and Morty. I'm not going to run away from it because a bunch of people demanded Szechuan sauce in the middle of a restaurant.
Yeah, fair enough, mate. I mean, I did have, I was turned off of the FIFA games because of the fact that the people that used to play them in my friendship group were just absolute arses when they won. Like, right. they kind of ruined it there because they were so good. The skill gap was so great between me and them when we were playing that I never had any fun because they would never teach me how to play the game properly. It was mm-hmm. a case of just like, oh, we're going to play, I'm going to win, let's play again. And I'm just like, I'm just not having fun. Like you're not yeah. telling me what you're doing and you're doing these tricks. And when I ask you how to do them, you're not telling me. And I can't be bothered to then go and look them up. So it's like, it means nothing to me in that
sense. That's a fair point. If you've played against anyone who lives, like we're not sporty people necessarily, but if you have friends who live on FIFA and all of a sudden you're getting lobbed, you're getting all these different trick shots and everything. Call of Duty kind of went that way as well. If you don't keep up with the ceiling yeah. of that player base, then you're just going to get mulched every time you try and have a casual game or two. But overall, I mean, yeah, for me, it's that general sort of thing where I'm like, I'm going to make my own decision on something. And if the fan base gets disgusting, then okay, but that's not me.
I wanted to get into something like League of Legends, but I've heard the community there is pretty toxic, like because of the fact that there's a lot of aggression towards your characters that you choose or your heroes, whatever they're called. And like, if you don't play in a certain way, or if you don't use this teamwork exactly as you're told to do, you just get berated and that. Like, I don't like games that boil down to, here's the meta, you better play exactly to how we tell you to in order to win, because winning isn't how I have fun in games. I have fun just playing around with different characters and letting me like explore different avenues. So when I'm just getting yelled at when I play like Overwatch, like, oh, you've chosen this character, get off our team, it's like how is this a fun game? How is this a fun
that's the where it's almost like pre-prescribed how you're supposed to have fun. Like, it's like come in here and tick this box, and it's like, unless you want to do anything else, it just sounds lame.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Mackenzie Young, who wants to do a shout out to Hand of Blood. Massive shout, I agree.
Classic.
What do you think, or what do you do if a game asks you if you would like the difficulty lowered because you're stuck? This always feels patronizing to me, and I struggle enough as it is. I hate this, Jules. I hate this with a passion. I despise when a game, when I've just died like five times in a row, and it pops up just saying, no, oh, do you want it low? No, I don't want it lowered. I want to beat it how it is. I will refuse to go back to the main menu. That thing when a game asks me, like, oh, dude, oh, it's, you know, do you want it lowered? That's like your parent telling you it's just a game, where it's just, oh, do you want it lowered? Yeah. It's just a game. Yeah, no, it's not just a game. It's my life, and I need to beat it.
I tell you what's done that approached the subject of lowering difficulty quite well recently is Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection. I finally beat that the other day, and I was really, really happy with myself. Nice. But I've noticed that when you die, it's not after like a certain number of deaths. It just gives you the options of retry the entire area, respawn from the last checkpoint, or respawn from the last checkpoint and lower difficulty. It always presents that as an option, but it never says to you, hey, look, you're struggling, just you want to do that. It just gives you the option there and then baked into the menu. Mm. If more games did that, if more games had like a die, and instead of it saying, are you sure you want to continue on at a lower difficulty, if they just said like, by the way, there's option to lower the difficulty is always available to you, and you can bump it up either side. Absolutely.
I've definitely got like that old school, and it's definitely my problem. I did a whole video on this about like how the issue with like video game difficulty just came from the arcades. It just came from companies trying to fleece as much money out of us as possible, and over time that's become like a, what, you can't beat it on medium, how dare you put it on easy? And I've definitely, because I grew up with that, I want to beat stuff on a prescribed difficulty. I also prefer, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. Like, do you prefer when a game has a baked-in difficulty, like Dark Souls, where you can't actually pick? Because I always prefer that. I'm like, if I'm someone experiencing something that's been created, I want whatever the difficulty is that the creator thinks it should be at. I'd rather that.
I can totally agree with you on that one, because it allows you to create enemies that actually feel balanced towards the story or gameplay mode that you're trying to tell. If you have like an artificially inflated enemy that just has a huge health pool, it doesn't become fun to take down. I'm kind of experiencing that with Dungeons & Dragons Dark Alliance at the moment. They don't change the enemy patterns or behavior or the spawn rate. All they do is they up the amount of damage they deal,
which I
the amount
hate.
Of health that they take. And that creates matches that drag on for way too long. And it encourages you to basically be overpowered by the time that you go and face them. And that, to me, is a broken gameplay loop. So, it does annoy me when I feel like the only thing that they do to adjust difficulty is just go, they hit harder, you take more damage, and they have higher health. If you're gonna up the difficulty, make it feel like the enemies are also evolving. So like, I can't remember which one it was. I think it might be Ninja Gaiden Black. It's a punishing game to begin with, but if you play on the harder difficulty, they up the aggressiveness of the enemies, but their health apparently doesn't change. So they still take the exact same amount of hits, but they're just more aggressive towards the player. I think that's a good way to balance it.
That's way better. I can't think what it is. Maybe one of the Metal Gears did it, where if you up the difficulty, the AI takes on different scripts that they didn't have before. Like, they'll hunt you down more, they'll look you out of cover more and things like that.
I know that they did it on European Extreme, because it's like, if you get spotted once, it's game over. And I think that they program the AI to be more aggressive in the hunting mode to make that feel more tense, that you could at any moment be seen once and then be sent right back to the start.
Because that thing that you mentioned, like, where I hate that, where it just feels like they're just tweaking numerics, where it's just sort of like, okay, well, your health is worth less, the bullets that they're firing are worth more, and you just die faster. There's no real like measure of skill there. Like, that's kind of why I gravitate towards something like a Dark Souls, and where at least it is like, it's a very specific difficulty. But yeah, I guess it's on in each individual developer to decide what's best for what they've put together. Next question from Tom Abbey: what's the best gig you've ever been to? Also, for their shout outs for Bullet, it's Tears Don't Fall or Hand of Blood.
Nice. What the thing is, this actually came up with my friend Chris the other day. We call him Panama Chris, because he looked great enough. Panama Chris. Basically, we were talking about our like favorite gigs ever, and I felt like I was cheating by putting in the Taste of Chaos tour that Kerrang ran back in 2006. Now, the lineup for that was Killswitch Engage, Funeral for a Friend,
great,
Reggie and the Full Effect. If you've not heard that band, they're absolutely hilarious, and The Used. And I was like, and that lineup there was utter perfection to my teenage ears.
Yeah,
it was so good, man.
That recommended like a fest, because my one for that, because we did this on the What Culture Music Channel, RIP. Although I think, I don't even know if it's still live. Maybe it's live. It's not.
Mate, it's in a state that, what's it called? That Film Theory's in. It lives until it dies and neither in between. It's Schrodinger's channel.
We haven't pronounced the body dead yet, but there is a body.
Exactly.
But yeah, on the music channel, we did do What's Your Best Gig as like a chatty face thing. And mine is always going to be Sonosphere 2014. It's when the big four came back together, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax, back when they hadn't played together for like 30 years or whatever. Yeah. Dave Mustaine came out and played next to Hetfield and Kirk Hammett for the first time.
Amazing.
And just, you know, that was just like dream come true for any sort of metalhead. It was awesome. And that will be mine. And like getting everybody back together for the final big jam thing where they all played Am I Evil by... I always get the name wrong. It's either Diamond Head or King Diamond, because King Diamond sang
King
for Diamond.
Head, oh, really? Was, oh, I can't remember.
It's some sort of diamond-based artist did Am I Evil, and that was what they eventually covered, but all together with all the members of every band all in one place. So mine's always going to be that. But I'm looking forward to getting back to gigs. Have you got any gigs booked for post-lockdown stuff?
I can't remember. I think that me and Phil were talking about seeing if Billy Talent were doing a run, because we've always wanted to go and see them. I've never been able to see them live, and I'd really, really like to tick that off. But I think it might be Melt Banana. It might be something that unfortunately, Arctangent, which is the festival that I love going to, has been cancelled this year. So we're completely bereft of musical choice down here, to be fair.
Yeah, we were meant to do download coverage. Like, I mean, we've mm-hmm. been meaning to do download coverage for the last few years, but obviously this year it was that pilot thing where it was a smaller audience anyway. But maybe next year we can get back on stuff in full. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, yeah, it's that time of the week again. It is. UPP. My question is, do recent games like Ratchet and Clank and Resident Evil 8 go to show the quality always beats quantity? I guess that means in terms of sequelization and stuff, because there's been a hell of a lot of Resident Evils, but I guess
Been big gaps between them, though, hasn't there? Apart from the remakes, obviously they kicked them out pretty quickly after that. We were told that was going to be a thing. I do think that it's very important for video game series to know when it is right to do a sequel, because you do end up feeling quite stagnant sometimes if you're just constantly recycling same ideas or you're just doing minimal tweaks, because you can only perfect something so much before fans are just like, why am I even bothering to pay for this? The FIFA
Especially
games,
the, like,
for example,
games
the
and stuff,
yeah, and the WWE games up until recently were suffering heavily from that because they weren't allowing time to fix core problems. I do think that quality definitely will win out over quantity. And it just makes me look forward to when those games do finally drop. Like the jump between Psychonauts and Psychonauts 2, when that drops later this year. It is this year,
right? It's out in August. I think it's the 25th of August. Like how many games actually real?
I know. I'm so happy that it actually is in existence. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. I cannot wait for that game.
I want developers to take as much time as possible. Sometimes it makes me worry that they're taking too long and the bottom's just going to fall out. Like, I think it's a near miracle that Psychonauts 2 is coming out. Like, the amount of different funding options that Tim Schafer's explored to get it to come together. Like, I was watching a compilation of back when he was asking for crowdfunding, and he had that whole thing where he was like, oh, if you fund us, then you get a share of the profits. And it was this whole experimental thing.
Yeah.
It's been, Psychonauts 2 feels like it's been in development since Psychonauts 1 at this point, but hopefully it's out in August. The next question, which is, you know, a brilliant question from Sam Tompkins: out of the four main roast dinner meats, chicken, lamb, beef, pork, how do you rank them? For me, it's lamb, beef, pork, and then chicken, which is madness to me because chicken feels like it needs to be the first one, unless he's doing reverse order.
Surely he's doing reverse order, as in, like, chicken is the top one.
Even if he's doing that, I mean, for me, chicken is definitely number one. I know it's the most versatile of meats, and I know that a lot of people, because of that, they say that it's bland and stuff. But for me, chicken would be number one. Then I'd have beef, then I'd have lamb, and then I'd have pork, I think.
Well, the thing is, with, like, lamb's always a bit divisive, isn't it? Because it's like... depends on where you go in the world to get it cooked. Like, if you have like New Zealand lamb, it's very different to like Icelandic lamb and stuff like that. And even as a now vegan, I've tried enough lamb to know which ones I like and which one I don't. And sorry, mum, I don't like the way you cook your lamb. Your lamb there, it's literally like eating a door wedge that's covered in mint. Like, I love you to pieces, but Jesus Christ, calm it down a bit.
Just a boot.
It's just so dry, mate. I feel like you could use it as a household sponge. Like, it's just...
But, you know, the bank with it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Just in through the window with a brick. The thing is that I feel like pork gets a bad rep because I feel like it's most people just do like pork chops or pork ribs, that's and then it becomes about off, the yeah. sauce, like yeah. rather than the actual meat itself. But I don't know, like it's a fine meat. I mean, I guess that I would probably put, if I was to go off the vegan train, I'd mm-hmm. say my tip top would be beef. Mm-hmm. Because I do enjoy, or did enjoy, a steak or two in my time. Mm-hmm. Then it'd be chicken, because I just adore the versatility, as we were saying before. Then I'd probably put pork and lamb at equal peaks down the bottom, really.
Fair. The pork chop thing is definitely what set me down a wrong path when I was a kid. I got served a very tough pork chop, like you said, and just never really recovered from it. I like pork for me has to be in sausage form. If it's going to be in chunky, like cutlet form, it's not going to be for me. But the other ones are all good.
I think with the pork chop scenario that we were talking about before, like with the bank robbing, you throw my mum's lamb through the window to break the window, and you can use the pork chop underneath your t-shirt as the gun.
You could just frisbee it, just try and take out three or four people at once. A final question from Laughing Sunbro, irregular absolute legend.
Oh, what a ledge.
Sunbro, who says, check it, lads. Masahiro Sakurai needs you. Now, Masahiro Sakurai is the Super Smash Brothers creative lead director dude. Zombie ninjas have kidnapped the Prime Minister. Are your Super Smash skills elite enough to save him? Task one, pick the final mystery Smash fighter. No rules, who do you choose? Waluigi, Erdnot Rex, the Queen, Josh Brown, who joins the
So we
Josh
get to cast
jabbed, so he's alive again now.
So we get to cast the final place.
One Smash fighter to help them all. I mean, I know exactly who mine is.
That's a tough one. Go on then. Who do you get picked?
Mine is Doomslayer. Mine is 1,000,000% the Doom guy, because he needs to be in Smash Brothers anyway. But that dude, you point him in whatever direction you need him in. I mean, he might end up killing the PM to save them, but he'd retrieve it. There's the fine print.
He'd throw the corpse back on the onto the the table and just be like,
You just shrug, cock his shotgun, and walk off again. But technically, he has retrieved the Prime Minister. So I don't know if there's anything better than that.
I feel like you've set the bar incredibly high there. I feel like I'm just trying to think of going through all of the gaming mascots throughout history and thinking who deserves another sort of resurrection.
I went down like the all-powerful god route, because I was like, I don't think anything can actually take down the Doom Marine.
I personally would say that maybe Azura from Azura's Wrath might give him a run for his money. Imagine that, just steps in there. Actually, Ken from Fist of the North Star. Like, Nani would be absolutely hilarious.
Is he the guy that punches people so hard they explode? They sort of go in the air and explode.
The translation is something like, you're an idiot because you don't already know you're dead, or something like that. And it's just kind of like, then they just go like, they explode and swell. Like, that would be, imagine how gory and graphic it would be to have that move inside a Smash Bros.
That is a massive shot. Honestly, like, the amount of different, because they just put Kazuya from Tekken into Smash Bros., which I didn't see coming. I love Kazuya, but I was like, that's a weird pick. There's so many other ones they could have done.
I know who I'd pick, actually, and it would be a reference to Nintendo's old days. I'd get, what's his name, Max from Mad World.
Oh, God, the guy with the big leather jacket.
And the chainsaw, sword for the hand. Like, that'd be amazing. If you had him in there, then it would pay homage back to the fact that Mad World was bizarrely released only for the Wii.
I was going to say, I always feel like Nintendo want to forget that even happened, because it's like the goriest thing they've ever had out. I can't think of any other game that's been more adult.
They had Manhunt 2 on it.
They had Manhunt, which you could, using the motion controls, batter someone to death with a toy.
It was grim.
The Weebo. Not to worry. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. I thought I'd have some sort of other outro, but I don't. So I'm going to cut straight to the final bit. This has been the UBP. Ivan Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you for having me, mate.
Thanks to everybody for submitting their questions, and we'll catch you all next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.